Working in back of the house at a restaurant can be a thankless, very stressful job. It can be hot. It's hard on your body. It's hard on your feet. It's nonstop. And now, more than ever, chefs and restaurateurs are finding it difficult to hire and keep really great talent. It does help to raise hourly wages, and a lot of restaurants are doing just that, but it's not always enough. So some restaurants are offering stock to employees, and in Las Vegas, one chef is dividing customer tips among all his staff. Brian Howard is the chef owner of the Chinatown hotspot Sparrow and Wolf. He's also the owner of the Spaghetti on the Wall Hospitality Group. Brian Howard, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. So tip pooling, we know about this. It's a common practice in restaurants, and that's when the front of the house employees like servers will share tips with other front of the house workers like servers, bartenders, and bussers. But tip sharing at your restaurant includes cooks. How does that work?
So, in order to be a part of a tip pool legally, you have to have a point of contact. So if you're a sushi bar chef or you have engagement with the guests, you're part of a tip pool. That's something that we, when we started Sparrow and Wolf 5 years ago, had looked at how do we include our cooks into this. We figured out there wasn't really a way because we have an open kitchen, but there was really no contact points. So we kind of went on, the last couple of years, but without being able to do it. And as we started to navigate into the newer climates, how to retain talent, we didn't really have much of a issue with our staff leaving during the pandemic. We've always, first and foremost, taken care of our people, and I believe we're in the people business, not the restaurant business. So that's first for me, always. Mm-hmm. But it's something we constantly always tried to go after and how to take better care. And I'll give you a little, snippet to what really pushed me to drive in the direction that we did was that we had hired an employee who just got out of culinary school. She was, and I thank her for this, by the way, because she really helped me get to where we're at. She just got out of culinary school, and she was a server. Years of being a server, front of the house employee, making cash tips every day. Spent all this money to go to culinary school, moved out here from California, living in a big house, doing all these things, and then got into the kitchen, where she was now no longer a tipped employee, making, a high hourly wage. Our cooks, they make anywhere between $15 and $20 an hour, which is on the higher spectrum mm-hmm. of the back of the house employees, especially for an off-strip restaurant.
But she wasn't making tips.
She wasn't making tips. So when she got her first paycheck, she was in love with the food. She was having a great time. She was very passionate about what was going on. She was learning. And like 4 weeks in, I could see like her demise of like, I'm not making the money I used to make. Mm-hmm. I got all these bills. I've got debt. I've got this and that. And she's like, Chef, I don't know if I can do this. And I'm like, well, like this is welcome to the kitchen world a little bit. When I was a cook, I made $9, $10 an hour and you figured it out. But nobody taught me, we'll get into a lot of this stuff. Nobody taught me how to manage money, right? So longer story shorter, it forced me to kind of be like, okay, let's revisit. How do we get to be able to tip our employees? We've always run a real tight staff. We have a small room, so we don't need a lot of servers. We run 2 to 3 servers on busy nights. And so the takeaway is large, right? I would say it's greater than most strip restaurants, to be honest with you, when you see the numbers. It's impressive. And I'm very happy to be able to do that. We had a meeting with our staff, and we said, listen, how can we do this where everybody's happy? One, I called my lawyer. I'm like, how can we do this legally? And he's like, you got to have a touch point. So either.
What was the legal question?
Well.
What are we talking about? How do we do what?
How do we tip the back of the house without having legally, essentially? Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's like, well, there has to be a touch point. They have to be part of the chain of command that has to interact with
That's
the guest.
That's a legal requirement?
Yes. So what we started to do, we looked at how we. One, I'm like, we're already doing a lot of these things where our food runners expedite on most nights. They garnish plates in our kitchen. There's already a touch point between the cook and the guest. So we started really running now our back of the house employees to be food runners, right?
What does that mean, food runner? They come out, what do?
They drop the food on the table. They interact with the guest.
Instead of the waitress? Or a waiter?
Well, our waiters never really, they don't run the food. They offer the service. So we have someone that is dedicated from the kitchen to actually physically drop the food to the table. Hmm. But along with that, they're garnishing plates, they're finishing dishes, and they're running part of the expediting. So right there was our opportunity and to have the touch point.
When did that start?
We started that probably a few months back, a couple months ago, 6 months ago maybe, within that system. And it's been successful so far. You're starting to see, and we sat down with all of our front of the house staff. We put some analytics in front of them, years worth of analytics that we've showcased. You know, we have nothing to do with their tips. We don't manage their money. That's their money. But we saw this is what's there. And if you guys are okay with this, is what we'd like to do as a business to better take care of our staff as a whole. And when you run, you know, restaurant margins, people are like, well, you're a business owner. You should take care of your staff and give them a living wage. Like we do. We do more than most. And we still run a business, right? And when you run a pennies business, like the restaurant industry, because any successful restaurant's probably taking 18% on the high end, where most, you know, standard is 7 to 10%. That's a pennies game, right? And then you start breaking plates and you start wasting food or misringing stuff. Those pennies go out the door.
How many additional people are you talking about that became part of the tip sharing pool?
10, you know, roughly 10 people.
Not per shift throughout the day, or 10 people per shift?
Throughout the day. Yeah.
So I have to ask, what about the wait staff there, mm-hmm. The hostess, did they go along with this right away?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, like we've got a really well-oiled and tight-knit group. Everybody there, I think, was in for the same interest. You had one or two pushback. We had one person leave, really, that didn't kind of buy into the system. But everybody else kind of bought into it, and they had their own, you know, they brought things to the table too. They're like, how about we do it this way, right? And we listened, right? Because it's at the end of the day, like, it's important that we operate as a team and function as a team and make sure that everybody's happy. And we all had the same goal in mind. So within trial and error, through a few days of trying things out in this way and that way and looking at analytics on paper and getting everybody's opinion, we figured out a system that worked for everybody.
Well, let me just ask you this question. If I was a wait staff there and I was making a certain amount of money, did the amount of money that I take home then in a week decrease because of this?
Well, I would say that whenever you're adding more people to a pool of anything, yeah, you're going to take a decrease. It wasn't significant enough where it was like coffee money for that person. You know, it wasn't a massive amount where it impacted them negatively.
Yeah, now you did this again, like you said, to make your employees happy. And during the middle of the pandemic, a lot of restaurants here still, to some degree, some people are struggling to find enough workers or adequate workers or good workers to work in a restaurant. Did this solidify your position, do you think, with the chefs and the people in back of the house? I mean, do they talk about it with you? Like maybe they were thinking about leaving, but now they're going to stay.
Well, we maintained, we had 36 employees when we went into the pandemic. We came back with 35, right? We also took care of them. We made sure that they had groceries. We paid some of them during the pandemic. Again, I think being a people person first and thinking about how we manage and maintain and retain talent for longevity has always been first and foremost. And our staff gets that we didn't really see the, like, I'm leaving, we're taking off and leaving. Mm-hmm. Our business levels increased massively where we needed new employees, which became harder to find those ones, if that makes sense. We haven't lost anybody prior, but we, I think, yeah, solidified, it made more sense to them. Like they now have an opportunity to take, okay. So when you're a cook, at least when I was a cook, right, you went to work, you spent your time in a sports bar after work or a pub or whatever. And then you went home, you went to sleep and then you woke up and you did it all again. Nobody ever taught them how to manage money or taught me how to manage money or find positive things to do outside of work. It was this whole kind of vicious cycle, and it's kind of why the kitchen and restaurants have gotten this bad rap of, you know, being a bunch of pirates and, you know, kind of mm-hmm. whatnot. That's shifting, right? And I love it because we're a part of the shift where we're teaching them that it doesn't have to be that way.
How are you teaching them? What are you doing?
During pre-shifts, we also hold meetings and individual counsel.
What's pre-shift?
It's our meeting that we have every day prior to service. So okay. We'll talk about our goals for the day. We'll talk about our specials, any special guests coming through the door. But then highlights of the week, right? We kind of focus on a couple topics each month, whether it's not only service-related, but personal-related on how you can better yourself as a person, right? We spend enough time in the kitchen together where you spend more time together at work sometimes than you do with your own families. So it's important that we're all learning together on how to manage that time, keep our mental health.
I'm kind of curious about that. Give me an example. For one of managing your money, what would you talk about? And then after that, how do you talk to somebody on your staff? I know you guys are probably close-knit about personal issues and how to handle personal issues.
Well, managing money, right? One of the things that, you know, got brought up, colleagues of mine and I were talking about this, and like, you know, nobody ever taught us how to buy a house, right? We just kind of made a little bit of money and thought that we didn't have enough money to buy a house. We were always broke because, you know, one, we're not saving that money, we're spending it on whatever. So now we can teach them like, okay, yeah, that 30 bucks that you spend every day in the bar or on food, if you eliminate 3 days of that and do it twice a week, that money, those little bit of money that you put aside, whether it's in a Robinhood account or into an Acorn that rounds up to your, your pennies that you're spending on your change.
Mm-hmm.
When you forget about that at the end of the month, you're going to have a little bit of a nest egg, right? Now, what you decide to do with that, maybe that's your travel money, right? Maybe that's a trip that you've been looking for. We try to motivate our team to go out, see things, go out, do something healthy for yourself every day, whether that's rock climbing, jiu-jitsu, hiking, taking advantage of your surroundings besides, you know, most cooks want to sleep all day. They go to work and they sleep till 2 o'clock and then they get up and they go do the job. So taking control of the moment is important. But, you know, those things, right, you never realize that your first house is kind of the moment where you've, you know, for me at least, it was the first time that I had like a large sum of money in my bank account when I sold it, right? And from there, now you can do multiple things, right? Mm-hmm. You have a little bit to play with. But teaching them how to do that.
Right? How do they respond to that? I mean, is anybody doing it?
Yeah.
Or are they just
absolutely
nodding their head?
I think you're going to have your success rate's always like 30% of anything in life, right? You're going to have people that, you know, they're the ride or die cooks and they're going to ride out. And then there's people that are engaged and really listening. And then there's people that really want it. They just don't know how to get there. So it's constant sit downs and progressive talks with them and seeing how do we get there. We create 30-day goals, 60-day goals, 90-day goals. And then we do that and we do our follow-ups as management teams on how to get them and where they're at.
Do you do more specifics, like talk to them about things they might want to invest in? Or do you just talk about investment in general?
Both, right? Investing is that's a whole nother subject, mm-hmm. right? And that's I'm not a professional investor, but, you know, there's things that work for me and things that haven't, and I can only make certain, you know.
What about bringing people in who are experts in some of these areas? I mean, you just started this, but I wonder, you know, if you keep going with this, eventually the amount of the number of topics you can talk about personally and know about are going to dwindle, and you might want to bring more specific people in to handle more specific topics.
Sure. But I think it's just the tip of the iceberg on how to get cooks and, you know, especially in our industry. And, you know, when you talk about the subject of labor shortage, every industry right now. People are just leaving their jobs because there was this narrative pitched to us of you can do anything. There's this big reset. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do what you were doing.
Yeah.
People are leaving to open Etsy shops and be puppet makers and doing all these crazy things. I don't understand half of it. And they're abandoning their daily jobs, some six-figure workers. So it's not just the restaurant industry. However, I'm in love with this industry. This is what I do, right? I love hospitality. It's why I wake up in the morning. For me, when I do this, it's about how I can see someone grow, right? For me, it's watching that dishwasher become a prep cook and to become a cook and to become a sous chef or, you know, the front of the house growing to become a wine manager and a manager and a restaurateur. Our business model is meant to retain talent long term. So our management people that invest with their time with us and, you know, if they have something to bring to the table, we're going to do that for them as well, long term, right? There's always a moment in your career where, I don't know how much time we got, but there's a moment as a restaurant owner where there's a salary cap, right? You can only offer so much, not just a restaurant owner, but any business owner, you can only offer so much as a salary. So either at some point you're going to lose that employee, right, to someone else that's going to pay them more, or you're going to make them a partner in your business on some level. So as we build spaghetti on the wall, our goal is to take these guys that have been long-term with us. You know, my general manager, he's now a business partner in Spaghetti on the Wall.
Bring them up with you.
You know, and we've been together for 14 years now at this point. Now we're starting a company together.
I wonder if you're sort of an iconoclast in this area, or I know the chefs in this town, restaurateurs, are very close-knit. Talking to other people about this, is anybody else taking you up on the same kind of idea? Are they interested in doing what you're doing, especially regarding tip sharing?
Yeah, there's a handful of other chefs in town that are introduced or have introduced. We're not the first that introduced the tip sharing into the kitchen. Mm-hmm. There was others doing that before us. We just figured out how to do it internally for us and how to make it work. But, you know, I think those that take care of their staff first are going to be the ones that come out of this strong and that are able to retain their employees. I think that's the bottom line of what we're discussing today. And however you do that, whether that's offering them longevity and a clear, critical side of path to be successful internally within their role, or even celebrating, maybe, you know, we had a server who he was with us for years and spent his time writing a children's book, became a published author now and left us, you know, and celebrating those wins. Mm-hmm. You know, like, again, like, it's the people, whether you're the guest or the hostess or the dishwasher, those are the people that make me successful. It's not my food. It's not my, you know, I'm a small part of what happens around me every day. You know, I'm a vision and a driving force to ensure that these things are going in the right direction. But every one of those people, finding the right people, right? Not just finding a body, right? A body can be anything, right? But finding that right person that makes sense to carry out what you're trying to do is the most important factor.